Okay, welcome everyone to another Tuesday afternoon. I'm Stephen Roberts. This is Cancel the Cabal on Shake and Wake Radio. I'm also on PSN Radio and SoFlo Radio and EPGN Radio. First of all, I do want to say that all stations are listener supported, so please hit the donate button if you're able to. And the second thing is, Annie wants to mention her very good friend, Melissa Roxanne, from American Voice Radio, passed away yesterday. Melissa was the inspiration for Annie and Rick to start up Shake and Wake Radio. So, rest in peace, Melissa. Bless her. I'm going to continue reading. I don't know what is next for The Truth About Contagion. Exploring Theories of How Disease Spreads by Dr. Thomas Cowan and Sally Fallon Morrell. We had finished the last chapter, but there's something called the epilogue, whatever that's supposed to be, and then there's something after the epilogue. I don't remember, but there's quite a few pages left. Biogeometry and EMF mitigation appendix. I don't know what's going to go on to, but I don't know whether we will finish this book today or not. But this section is after the last chapter. It's called the epilogue. It sounds like it's going to start off with a fairy tale. I don't know. Once upon a time, in a faraway place, lived a king and a queen. Their kingdom was happy, prosperous, and peaceful. Unfortunately, the royal couple was barren, and the people who worried that they would be left with no suitable heir to the throne. One day, the king and the queen were walking in the forest. They came upon a pond. Out of the pond jumped a frog, who informed them that they would soon have a beautiful daughter. Naturally, this news filled them and the entire kingdom with joy. To celebrate the arrival of their daughter, the royal family invited the 12 wise women of the kingdom to a feast at the palace. After the feast, each of the wise women spoke up and conferred a blessing on the new child. One gave a blessing of beauty, another gave a blessing of kindness, another of wisdom, and so on, to include all the good qualities that enable the human being. After the 11th wise woman had spoken, an uninvited woman burst into the palace banquet hall. She was an elder woman, but unlike the others, she had evil intentions. She was a witch, and she was angry that she had not been invited to the banquet to honor the new child. Out of her fury, she pronounced a terrible curse on the child, saying that as the child grew into adulthood, she would prick her fingers on a spindle and fall down dead. The people in the hall were stunned and shocked. Thankfully, the 12 wise women had not yet spoken. Upon hearing this curse, she announced that the evil woman was powerful, and therefore she could not completely undo the curse. But she could change it. Instead of falling down dead, the young girl, if she pricked her finger on a spindle, would only go to sleep, not die. After the banquet, the king ordered the destruction of all spindles in the kingdom. There would be no possibility that the princess could ever prick her finger on a spindle. As time went on, the princess grew into a beautiful young woman, with all the wonderful traits bestowed upon her by the wise women. She was kind, beautiful, wise, and the entire kingdom prospered. One day, the king and queen left the palace for a state outing. As usual, the princess was left in charge of the state officials, whose orders were to keep a close eye on her. Everyone loved the princess, and being of a curious nature, she convinced the officials to let her wander freely in the castle. She came upon a room she had never seen before. Inside was an old woman sitting on a stool spinning wool. Curiously, having never seen anyone spin wool before, she asked the old woman what she was doing. The old woman handed her the spindle, and the princess pricked her finger and, as predicted, fell into a deep sleep. When the king and queen returned to the castle, they put her in a beautiful bed. Then everyone else in the kingdom fell asleep as well. The bread was still in the oven, the shoemaker's leather still on the bench. The shepherd's flock were still in the fields. The entire kingdom fell under the influence of the evil spell. As time went on, the castle became engulfed in a mass of thorns and vines. Anyone visiting the kingdom from another land would be unable to penetrate the deep thicket of toxic thorns. Those who tried were met with certain death. So it was for 100 years. One day, a young prince from a faraway land was out hunting and came upon the overgrown castle. An old man told him about the plight of the beautiful young princess inside. Something moved him deeply. He knew he could and must save the princess and the kingdom. He announced his intentions to his mother and father, the king and queen, and the entire court. They forbade him to undertake this quest, knowing he would only meet certain death. He responded simply, "I'm not afraid. I will rescue the beautiful princess." And so it came to pass. Without any fear in his heart, the thorns had no power over the prince. As he approached the castle, they parted before him. He found the princess lying on her bed. He was astonished by her radiant beauty. He knelt and kissed her. The princess woke, and with her, the entire kingdom. Everyone simply resumed their business. The prince and the princess were married. The kingdom was restored to health, prosperity, and peace, and they all lived happily ever after. I think I know this story. Maybe we all do, I don't know. Most of you will recognize the story as Sleeping Beauty and Briar Rose. It was a story told to children all over the world for centuries to impress upon their souls the ways of the world and to give them courage. It was also the story of COVID-19. If we know how to properly unravel its metaphors. The world was peaceful and prosperous, but it was clear that without a true air, without a true direction, the world would not be able to go on as it was. Then, as if out of nowhere, a lowly frog, a representation of the spiritual world in fairy tales, informs the king and queen that there is a road to continued prosperity and fruitfulness of the land. A princess shall be born. Overjoyed, the royal couple invite the 12 wise women to celebrate their news. The 12 wise women represent the collected wisdom of the universe. They are the zodiac, cycle of the year, and the connection between the cosmos, the entire zodiac, and the earth, the cycle of the year. But there is a 13th woman, the evil witch. Witches are typically depicted in fairy tales as having distorted, twisted bodies, yellow eyes, and sallow skin. They are the picture of illness, the incarnation of the materialistic view of life. They are fallen matter, hence sort of crone stepmother or weak mother figure. The wise women are the spiritual view of life. The witches and the fallen women are a materialistic view of life. The 12 wise women cannot undo the power of the witch's curse. It is too powerful. In fact, the curse is something the kingdom must go through to achieve health, prosperity, and peace. On a higher end, on a higher and lasting level. She can, however, mitigate its power, and so it is. The entire world goes into lockdown. Anyone trying to rescue the world, anyone who puts out that life doesn't have... Let's start that over here. Anyone who points out that life doesn't have to be like this is torn asunder by the toxic thorns that engulf the kingdom. The entire world is cursed, living as if in a dream or spell. The curse of materialism and all its guises for the promise of faster video games just like us. But there is a way out, a way discovered by the prince from a faraway land. He expresses this clearly. I'm not afraid. Without fear, guided by love, and the curse can be broken. The world can be restored. The lesson can be learned. Materialism, currently in the form of a toxic virus, theory and enthrallment to the internet, can be overcome. We can do this. It's just a spell. It's not real. It's make-believe. All we have to do is find courage and love in our hearts and embrace the truth. That is all that matters. Okay, next page is Appendix A. It's named Water. I'm just going to do a quick flip through, see how many pages I do have left. Okay, let's see. I'm guessing about 15 or 16 pages. Might get through this. Probably will. And then I was going to start another book. As described in Chapter 8, water that heals, the kind of water that the healthiest human cultures have all consumed, shares a number of specific characteristics. To reiterate, healthy water is free of all toxins. It contains the full complement of minerals, and it is structured through subjection to a constant vortex motion. As a result of this constant vortex motion, the water is oxygenated. The oxygenation step is crucial in producing healing waters, and is a characteristic of the most renowned healing waters on the planet. Like the water of Lourdes and in the Ganges River, finally the water is finished. Through its exposure to natural sounds and frequencies of all along natural sounds and frequencies all along its path. When these steps are followed, we have a healing water that is one of the core foundations of health for plants, animals, and humans. Providing healing, healthy water like this should be a basic requirement for every hospital, hospice, and healing institution. Interestingly, and in addition to the water we drink, it is clear from both historical evidence and modern research that the water we wash and bathe in is at least as important as the water we drink. This point was brought home to us as a result of personal experience and looking at the research of the Ophora Water Systems. Ophora is an innovative water company located in Southern California, which has developed a technique for making mini municipal or well water and cleansing it of all traces of toxins, pharmaceuticals, fluoride, chlorine, and even microplastics. As far as we know, no other system is able to purify water to this level. Then the water is remineralized by adding all the known minerals found in seawater. After that, the water is put through a rose quartz vortex and oxygenated to 40 parts per million with a proprietary technology. This is by far the highest oxygenated content of any water tested, on a level with the rarest and finest healing waters on Earth. The water is pH balanced and finished with exposing water to the sounds of nature. Studies of people who soak in this oxygenated water and drink 1/2 gallon per day show some amazing results. First, the oxygen saturation of the tissues immediately goes up and stays to the highest levels for up to 12 hours. This is a more robust oxygen saturation response than one gets with hyperbaric oxygen therapy, a strategy known to produce many therapeutic effects. Second, and even more astonishingly, the phase angle measurement of the tissues also rise. The phase angle measurement tells us about the level of hydration. Whoops, my screens went dark. My YouTube video must have ended. Oh, no, I forgot to start it. My bad. The phase angle measurements tell us about the level of hydration in the tissues, and it actually an indication of the subject's biological age. Phase angle measurement. No, that's not it. Well, pHa is a direct measurement of your cell membrane integrity. The membrane is what the structure of the water inside and outside of your cells. The membrane is where the cells communicate with one another and where an electrical charge is created so the cell can function. See Chapter 9 for a discussion of appropriate diet for cell membrane integrity. The phase angle measurement goes up within hours of a 1 hour soak in a bath of oxygenated purified water, along with drinking 1/2 gallon of the water over the course of a day. Furthermore, this improvement in the phase angle, a process that usually takes months of detoxification and the cleanest of diets, seems to last for some time after even just one session of soaking and hydration. One can only guess at the improvement of the quality of hydration and the biological age of the person. If this became weekly or daily practice, imagine the results that hospitals would achieve if they began treatment with oxygenated drinking and bathing water, rather than putting patients on ventilators. For purity and oxygenation levels, the Ophora water is currently the only system that we can recommend for creating therapeutical waters. This presents a dilemma, as most readers will find purchasing either a Ophora system for home use or actually purchasing the water directly from OphoraWater.com to be cost prohibitive. Clearly, the best solution would be for every town and municipality to use multiple Ophora water systems to produce healthy water for its citizens. The Ophora owners are ready and prepared to help with this project. For personal showering and bathing, the simplest options are either an Ophora shower device, which eliminates some toxins from the water, while oxygenating and structuring it in conjunction with some kind of filter or reverse osmosis system in your house. Another possibility is an Aquadia showerhead attachment for your shower or bath. The Aquadia system puts the incoming water through high-speed implosion vortex so that it essentially sucks the water out of the pipe rather than pushing it as is otherwise the case. This is exactly how the heart helps move the blood, through suction rather than pushing. The suction is easily confirmed by putting one's hand over the water as it emerges from the shower head. Rather than your hand being pushed, you will feel your hand sucked up against the shower head. The vortex created by the arrangement of crystals inside the shower head creates a high-speed implosion effect, an effect that imbues the water with energy and life. An interesting experiment is to water one group of plants with aquadia water and a second group with normal water. Showering under the aquadia shower head is like taking a shower under a waterfall, and bathing in aquadia water is like bathing in a flowing stream. The invigorating effects are similar. The aquadia people can customize the type of crystal they use in producing their shower head, and the materials, usually gold, silver, and bronze, that the shower head is made of. The Dr. Tom Cowan, the drtomcowan.com website is currently the U.S. distributor of aquadia shower heads. There are a variety of more affordable options for home filtration systems as that could be combined with an aquadia shower head. A good option is for home delivering water is Mountain Valley Spring, which has delivered service nationwide and uses glass bottles only. Castle Rock bottles water in glass and is available in stores nationwide. A simple way to mineralize and oxygenate these recommended waters is to fill an 8-ounce glass, add a pinch of unrefined sea salt, and stir with a long-handled spoon, making a vortex. Stir it in one direction and then reverse to stir the other direction, repeating several times. Okay, the next section is Appendix B, Biogeometry and EMF Mitigation. Let me see here. I guess I'll take a little break here. We've gone a little bit, and let's just take a couple short songs, I think, or maybe one medium song or something. I find about 6-7 minutes, I guess. I guess if I wait here long enough without speaking or saying anything, I might waste enough time. Okay. I've got about 7 minutes we'll take here. Be right back in a few minutes, everyone.
Harmony or danced short movements. but no one has ever heard the whole song since God sang it alone. One of these days he'll gather all his children home, and one by one the singers of all the ages will lift their voices and fill in the parts life taught to them. At last we'll hear love's sweetest songs that was first conceived in the heart of the great songwriter himself. And it will be perfect. What music there will be when the song of all the ages is sung around the Father's throne, when all God's singers get home.
As we sing here on earth, songs of sadness and mirth, 'tis a foretaste of rapture to come.
But our song can't compare with a glory we share with all of God's singers get home.
Okay. And we are back. The next section is called Appendix B, Biogeometry and EMF Mitigation. The interesting and amazing thing about the current state of human awareness is that we generally call science is actually mostly a series of easily disproven, irrational superstitions. Here is one simple example for such a superstition, which once corrected holds the key of the protection out ourselves and all of nature from the harmful effects of EMFs. Start by asking yourself or your friends the simple question, does the form, shape, and pattern of some object and the quality of the materials that make this form, shape, or pattern have an effect on the visible energies of living things? Science, at least medicine, is clear that such an idea is unscientific nonsense. If a doctor at a conventional medical conference suggested that one could lay a geometric form on a human being or place a geometric form near a human being to produce a therapeutic effect, he would be a laughingstock. However, consider the Stradivarius violin, widely considered the best violin ever made, some of them selling for tens of millions of dollars. What is this violin? Simply put, it is a scientific geometric form made from a specific material called moon wood, timber harvested during the waning moon when the sap in the trees is at its lowest, that somehow forms invisible sound waves into unmatched music. The sound this specific form made with this specific material produces has been prized for centuries by violinists all over the world. Apparently, the form and material of this specific violin is able to shape invisible sound waves to create the most exquisite music. Only a completely unscientific mind would conclude that this is the only example in nature in which form patterns, and shape made out of specific materials affect the energy that we now know animates life. The reality is that this process of form, shape, pattern, and material affecting the energy around us is in the norm and not some unusual occurrence. It is the basis of sacred science all over the world, even back to the time humans lived in caves and carved geometric forms into the walls of the caves. From our earliest days through the forms of the pyramids, monuments, and sculptures. Sculpture humans have made with material and form to create effects on the life around them. It is only the modern irrational materialistic scientists whose ideas are formed primarily in superstition who deny these effects are real. Biogeometry is simple. The science of how form, shape, and patterns combine with certain materials shape the energy in the world around us. The result of this shaping is either a beneficial or harmful effect on all life forms, including human beings. Living at a time of increased electrosmog, with no apparent end in sight for the level of pollution we will be exposed to, it is imperative that all these readers explore the strategies and techniques offered by biogeometry to mitigate these effects. This is not in any way to suggest that putting 5G satellites and towers up is somehow fine. If we just use biogeometry to mitigate these effects. This is not in any way to suggest that putting 5G satellites and towers up is somehow fine if we just use biogeometry to mitigate these their effects. This is not at all true. These insane installations must be stopped. At the same time, right now, everyone can and should avail themselves of the scientific biogeometry to deal with the current electromagnetic pollution we all face. No disrespect is meant to the many companies that are using waves, patterns, forms, and other techniques to mitigate EMF effects. Some of them are helpful. However, based on studies with plants, animals, and humans, as well as our personal experience, the strategies used by biogeometry stand above all the rest in terms of their safety and efficacy. For example, in the late 1990s, the National Liver Disease Research Project in Egypt undertook a study of patients with hepatitis C and elevated liver enzymes. Although most claim that hep C is a viral disease, the elevation of the liver enzymes does not argue for the presence of a virus, but indicates some toxin that is affecting the health of the liver. In this study, the participants were asked to wear either a biogeometry pendant used as a placebo or follow conventional antiviral therapy. The researchers followed the course of the liver enzymes in the 6 months after the intervention. The head of the study, Dr. Tasha Khalid, announced on Saudi television that the results showed 90% of the participants who used the biogeometry pendants had a reduction in liver enzymes in the first 6 months. This is in contrast with the reduction of 50% of those who used conventional treatment and 20 to 30% of those who had a placebo group. This is a dramatically positive result for such a simple and inexpensive intervention, and one that should be followed up with many studies on other illnesses. The best way to use biogeometry is to become a biogeometry practitioner yourself. You can do this by contracting the Vasika Institute and signing up for their online classes, vasika.org, V-E-S-I-C-A.org. The next thing is to contact and work with a trained biogeometry practitioner who can get you started in mitigating your personal space, including helping you find personal protective devices to use. The final approach is that one that is the least everyone should use is to purchase a L90 and bioemitter pendants from the Vasika.org website and use them as directed all the time. The Vasika website also features the fascinating work of Ibrahim Karim, who was able to mitigate the effects of radio antennas in a church steeple in Hamburg, Switzerland, using various shapes strategically placed in the church and nearby houses. In addition, there are many common sense precautions that everybody can take. If you use a cell phone, keep it to a minimum and never put it to your ear. Have a landline in your home and for regular telephone use. If possible, use wired internet, not Wi-Fi. At least turn off your Wi-Fi at night. Don't let your utility company install a smart meter. There is often a fee to pay for keeping the old-fashioned analog meter, but it is worth it. While you sleep, your bedroom should be free of electrosmog. Turn off the fuses to all wiring in your bedroom at night. You can even have an electrician install a switch to do this near your bed. Don't have an electric alarm clock on your nightstand. near your head. Use a battery-powered alarm clock instead. Avoid electric cars, fluorescent and compact lights, smart appliances, and the electric-powered exercise equipment. Above all, spend time each day outside, far away from antennas, in a park, on a farm, or in the woods, and give your body the rest it needs from EMF pollution. Appendix C, what to eat. A healthy diet, one that helps maintain your cellular gels, gives you maximum energy, and protects you as much as possible from EMFs, does not require any renunciation. You don't have to eat a diet that is dry and tasteless, but can enjoy a variety of delicious, satisfying food. What is required is the attention to quality and preparation methods. In other words, we have to think carefully about every morsel of food we put in our mouths. In traditional cultures, they ate the food that they had and knew instinctively how to prepare it. They did not have to think about how to have a healthy diet. It just happened naturally. The mark of modern man is that he is an individual, and he can no longer depend on his tribe or village to make decisions for him. He is faced with a bewildering variety of choices, especially in the food he eats. He must wade through the myriad offerings of processed food, much of it addictive, and also be wary of misinformation, especially the misinformation coming from the medical establishment. He must avoid falling for a diet of industrial foodstuffs, while also steering clear of weird invented diets, and especially low-fat diets that are impossible to follow. In terms of quality, avoid industrial farmed food. Someday everyone will have a farm, meaning that everyone will know a particular grass-based farmer from whom they purchase their meat, poultry and eggs, and dairy foods. There is no way that healthy animal foods can be raised in an industrial system. To find these foods, visit realmilk.com or contact your nearest local chapter of a Weston A. Price Foundation. WestonAPrice.org. For grains and produce, buying organic is important, especially when it comes to wheat products. Buying organic bread, crackers, and flour will ensure that the wheat has not been sprayed with glyphosate just before harvest. Organic produce is now widely available, even in supermarkets. An important source for the shopping guide published by the Weston A. Price Foundation. Updated yearly, the guide names over 1,600 products categorized as best or good. The guide is free to members and can also be purchased at westonaprice.org. For recipes, see Nourishing Traditions, the cookbook that challenges politically correct nutrition and the diet dictocrats. Get your fats right. First and foremost, we need to get our fats right, because the right fats help maintain our cell membranes and contribute to stable structured water in our tissue. The right kind of fats carry critical vitamins that sustain and protect every system in the body. Sweets. The bane of the modern diet, refined sweeteners, should be minimalized. We know that is hard. Refined sweeteners include sugar, high fructose corn syrup, agave syrup, glucose, and fructose. You will find that eating the right fats will help produce your craving, will help reduce your cravings. And you don't have to deprive yourself entirely. Homemade desserts made with natural sweeteners are fine in moderation. Eat sweet foods after a meal so that they don't cause a blood sugar roller coaster. Okay, next part here is called Addendum. Since publication of the contagion myth, a number of new studies have appeared or have come to our attention. These shed new light on the points we made in the book, proving that there is simply no scientific case to be made for the existence of SARS-CoV-2 virus, nor any justification to the claim that causes illness. Many of these papers are difficult for a layperson to interpret. Many contain statements that, once interpreted, are shocking to read. Hang on a few seconds here. I gotta put another video on so I don't, my screens don't go black again. In this addendum, we provide the relevant citation, quote the most important passages from the article, and gave a short explanation for the significance of this finding. As always, we don't claim to be the sole keepers of the truth, but we do insist on a proper scientific debate based on facts, not propaganda. In this spirit, we encourage other scientists to comment on the facts of our conclusions rather than on our right to say them. Oh, let's see. I'm not sure what this is. Carmen, VM, and others. Detection of 2019 novel coronavirus, 2019 nCoV, by the real-time RT-PCR. Euro Surveil, January 2020. The ongoing outbreak of the recently emerged novel coronavirus, 2019 nCoV, poses a challenge to public health laboratories as virus isolates are unavailable. That must be a FOIA request. I'm not sure. Not positive, but the authors, more than 20 virologists who work in public health, were tasked with developing tests to accurately determine who is infected with the new virus and who is not. As they say in the introduction, there is no virus isolates available, which actually means they have no idea whether the virus actually exists. Furthermore, there is no possible way to devise a test for something you haven't isolated or analyzed. The situation is similar in asking someone to devise a test for unicorns while forbidding them from finding out whether unicorns actually exist. No wonder these scientists find this task challenging. Further on, they reiterate the problem. We aimed to develop and deploy robust diagnostic methodology for use in public health laboratory settings without having virus material available. Read that again. Their job is to develop a test to detect the new virus, but they don't have any samples of the new virus to work with. This is nothing short of shocking to read. Yeah, it's been that way for 2.5 years. Unbelievable how dumb people are. Harcourt, J, and others, severe acute respiratory syndrome, coronavirus 2, from patient with coronavirus disease, United States CDC Bulletin, Volume 26, Number 6, June 2020. In the results section, the authors state, Therefore, we examine the capacity of SARS-CoV-2 to infect and replicate in several common primate and human cell lines, including human adenocarcinoma cells, AS49, human liver cells, HUH7.0, and human embryonic kidney cells, HEK293T. Each cell line was inoculated at high multiplicity of infection and examined 24 hours post-infection. No CPE was observed in any of the cell lines except the viral cells. No CPE means cytopathic effect, which refers to structural changes in host cells as they are caused by viral invasion. The infecting virus is said to cause lysis, breaking up of the host cell, or when the cell dies without lysis and inability to reproduce. Both these effects is said to occur due to CPE. While this may not mean much to most readers, it is in reality a shocking statement. Virologists have three hosts they can use in their attempts to prove that viruses cause illness. After isolating the virus, they can expose humans to the virus. They can expose animals to the virus, or they can use tissue cultures taken from various animals or human sources and expose the tissue cultures to the virus, leaving aside the fact that they never actually isolate and purify the virus, which they openly admit. Let's assume that the unpurified fluid they are using does contain the relevant virus and therefore should be able to transmit infection. In the history of virology, most virologists have decided not to do their experiments on human subjects, as this is considered unethical. In the case of SARS-CoV-2 virus, we know of no publication or study that used humans as a test subjects. I'm gonna stop right there and take a break. Good place for it. Get a little something to drink. Walk around for a minute. So, let's see. I guess about... don't think I played this one yet today, so maybe I have. Yes, I have. Oh, well. I'll put these two songs on. Be back in about 6 minutes, everyone.
This song is for all of those whose names are there. And for all of those who risked having their names there on the wall.
From a distance, as she walked up to the wall, in her hand she held some flowers, as her tears began to fall, then she took out pen and paper, as to trace her memories, then she looked up to heaven, and the words she said were these. Time you see, all I have.
Okay, welcome back here, everyone. I pitched the idea to Annie about the documentary that just came out yesterday by Stu Peters. It's called Died Suddenly. I wanted to watch it first to make sure there wasn't any bad language in it, but, well, it's 1 hour and 8 minutes long, so I'm going to play it and hope there isn't. It does say not suitable for children, but that's probably going to be for graphic images and that kind of stuff. So hopefully there's no bad language in it. Yeah, like I said, there's just two pages left. 2.5 maybe. Yeah, 2.5 pages. Be done in just a few minutes, everyone. So, virologists also admit that in the case of most viral infections, there are no studies available that prove infection in animals. How a virus can infect and kill humans, but not animals, is left unexplained. Researchers got around this obvious biological conundrum by saying there are no animal models on which to test such and such a virus. In other words, we know that the virus infects and kills humans, even though we've never tested the virus on humans, because that would be unethical. Therefore, we do our tests on animals, even though when we test animals, they don't get sick, because they are not proper hosts for the virus. So you'll just have to trust us. In the case of SARS-CoV-2, there are 2 studies we know of that unpurified virus on animal models, one with hamsters and one with mice. In the hamster study, researchers took the unpurified lung cancer grown centrifuged animal secretions and squirted it down the throats and into the lungs of a group of unfortunate hamsters. Some, but not all, of the hamsters got pneumonia, and some even died. We have no idea what would have happened if they had squirted plain lung cancer cells into the lungs of these hamsters, but probably not anything good. And even more perplexing, some of the hamsters didn't even get sick at all. Well, which certainly doesn't square with the deadly contagious virus theory. In the mouse study, researchers infected both transgenic mice, wild mice, with unpurified virus. None of the wild mice exposed to the virus got sick. Of the mice genetically programmed to get sick, a strategically insignificant number either lost some fur luster or had an insignificant weight loss. Thus, scientists have not been able to show that the COVID-19 virus causes harm to animals. At least 95% of the virological proof of contagion studies are carried out on animals or human tissue. In other words, virologists never expose humans to a virus, and they rarely expose animals. Instead, they prove infection. They grow tissues from taken from various sources and expose the virus to these tissues. Never mind that in order for the virus to infect any tissue culture, they have to starve the tissues first in a minimal nutrient medium, and then poison the tissues with gentamicin and aflatoxin, 2 potent antibiotics that are nephrotoxic to the kidneys. Let's see what they get from exposing human tissue cultures to the virus. As you can read, in all 3 of the human cell lines, no CPE, no cell death, no infection was observed. Only viral cells, monkey kidney cells, were adversely affected. And remember, the material injected into these cells contained kidney toxins. So basically, they proved that SARS-CoV-2 virus does not infect human tissue. Interestingly, in their conclusion, the authors didn't mention this important fact. Only virologists reading the whole paper will find out that if you want to grow the virus, don't bother to use human cell lines. CDC document, novel coronavirus 2019 and COV, real-time RT-PCR diagnostic panel, July 13, 2020. On page 39 of the document, under performance characteristics, we read, since no quantified virus isolates of the 2019 nCoV are currently available, assays designed for detection of a 2019 nCoV RNA were tested with characterized stocks of in vitro transcribed full-length RNA. Not sure what all this means, and maybe he'll explain. Thus, as recently as July 2020, the CDC is publicly admitting in writing they have no isolates of the 2019 nCoV-2 virus. Instead, they are basing their analysis and test preparations on manufactured pieces of RNA, which have no proven relationship to any virus. Here we have clear language from the CDC saying the virus has never been seen, isolated, or characterized. How anyone thinks they can make a test to detect something that has never been isolated and characterized strains any sense of credulity or scientific reasoning. This is a clear and damning statement showing the complete lack of evidence for SARS-CoV-2. And something imaginary can't possibly cause disease except through psychological methods. There is no viral disease called COVID-19. Yu Zhang W. and others are NACE-resistant virus-like particles containing long chimeric RNA sequences produced to two plasmid co-expression system, Journal of Clinical Microbiology, 2007. DOI, not sure what that is. 10.112. We find the following quote under figure 3 of the study. Lane I positive control of PETMS2-3V plasmid using the primers SARS-1 and HA300RTA lane 2. I don't know what that means. Doesn't make any sense. This paper is by a group of Chinese virologists who were testing and reporting on a new and different technique of characterizing viruses. Nothing particularly funny about that. The funny part is they are claiming to be using primers, genetic sequences taken from various SARS viruses. They include SARS-CoV-2, CoV-3, and SARS-CoV-1, CoV-2, and CoV-3 viruses in their analysis. Wait a minute. SARS-CoV-3 virus? Question mark. We didn't know there was a SARS-CoV-3 virus. What are they talking about? Question mark. To make this paper even more interesting, note the date of the publication, 2007. Interesting. In other words, this paper is claiming they have sequences isolated from SARS-CoV-2 called a novel coronavirus, and this is 2007. We have heard of something called time travel, but this finding makes no sense at all. And that's the very end, everyone. I just have nothing but endnotes and citations. So I think I will play, let's see, one short song. And then we'll come back to the documentary. Be right back in about 3.5 minutes, everyone.
U.S. life insurance companies have reported an overwhelming and unexplainable increase in all-cause deaths among 18 to 49-year-olds. Along with that, there's also been an increase in certain medical diagnoses, such as miscarriages and Bell's palsy.
Well, when I first started seeing these strange anomalies in the blood, it's just there's something different about the blood. All of these people that were dying, doesn't matter what they died of, they were having this unique... there's this unique change in the blood.
I feel as though I am seeing something that could be causing their death. No one will see what I see.
So in the very beginning, I'm thinking, okay, so COVID could have caused this possibly, but now I'm seeing these in people that supposedly never had COVID, and then you find out they were vaccinated. And so it's like, okay, so it's the vaccine might be causing this.
that we're in a fifth generation warfare.
They now seek the news openly to manipulate and deceive the American population.
But you don't believe in any conspiracy there?
Jane, what more can you tell us about the Sullivan Brothers building that's collapsed?
Leaf of song.
And we're injecting them in little kids' arms.
An 18-year-old health worker has developed blood clots after
controversial piece of Bigfoot.
Just days after getting their second COVID-19 vaccine, two teenage boys died in their sleep.
Oh, my God!
A 9-year-old went to sleep in Eagle Mountain and never woke up.
School cheerleader who died suddenly.
Who knows? Young people are dying, is this.
You know, Matt and I are constantly talking about Malthusian theory.
Malthusian theory,
yes,
I know.
I'm sure you are.
It says it on one of the coffee cups I was given. You know, when I was at junior college, Chabot Junior College, we finished a history course, and the professor wrote up, you need to learn this word. He wrote up the word triage, which represented, I was told, the concept that eventually the world will have too many people in it in order to subsist on its own. And that stuck with me for a long time, and that's what Inferno is about. The quantum physics of overpopulation in an instant, they could be too many people on the planet Earth, and actually the math does add up.
Just give us a 20-second definition of Malthusian theory, which
there
is
you
amazing.
Go. Well, that's what I'm built for.
I, Thomas Robert Malthus, have merely done you the service of stating the obvious, that the demographics of our situation equal death.
Reverend Thomas Robert Malthus was a British demographer of the late 1700s and was the first to popularize the idea that there's simply too many people using up too much resources.
How many cars, stereos, fancy bars?
How many people could the world support? Well, it depends. It's a sliding scale.
Malthusian ideology is often summarized in the following graph.
Very simple graphs which project what's going to happen to the planet over the next 150 years if we don't do something drastic to stop it.
It's an ideology, an eschatology.
Here we can see a chart that looks at the total world population over the last several hundred years. And at first glance, this is a bit scary.
And it spawned a new genre of fear that lasted for generations. The fear of overpopulation.
You have to get the death rate and birth rate in balance, and there's only two ways to do it. One is to bring the birth rate down, the other is to push the death rate up.
If we do not, by humane means, limit our numbers, then numbers are going to be limited by more famines and shortages.
It's reaching plague proportion.
No intelligent, patriotic American family ought to have more than two children, preparably one.
Maybe anybody who's thinking of having a third child ought to go hungry a week.
So should we have policies that penalize people for having extra kids in the developed world?
So I do think that we should at least consider it.
And this is where people start getting nervous talking about overpopulation and population issues, because they're scared that I'm going to take away their rights to have children.
It's the belief in a coming apocalypse, and that it is you and I who are ushering it in.
We're even running out of sand, which may not seem important, but without it you can't make concrete or glass, like for windows, so you can look outside and see the world ending.
Now, the world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
Well, common sense would tell you, if you have a man standing in front of you saying he's going to reduce the world's population by 10 or 15% using vaccines, what does that mean to you? It means somebody's going to die because you put a vaccine in them. It doesn't mean you're going to save people. That's pretty much common sense in my brain. But yet I saw him say it. He said it. And here we are. I don't know. I'm just, here we are. I'm now an anti-vaxxer. I wasn't before. From what I've learned here with this and seeing what I've seen, not just in the funeral home, but, you know, what everybody else has had an opportunity to see, I don't want to take any vaccine because I don't trust the pharmaceutical industry. I mean, I just buried someone recently who died suddenly, wasn't sick, person in their 60s, but otherwise was not sick. And I met with the family, and that was my first question, was what happened to him? Somebody mentioned to go on to Google and then type in died suddenly and find the news articles that would pop up. And lo and behold, here's a whole listing of people, of articles, of people within that last week who died suddenly. Younger people, older people, but a lot of younger people throughout around the world. Famous people, athletes have just dropped dead without explanation. And it's like it's no big deal. It's like we just don't know. It happens. But no, it's not happened. It's never happened like this until now.
My phone goes over and trying to make sure I don't miss something. I'm hoping that we can get one of those important calls. See, this is both from Carotid and Veins. Oh, look how thick that thing is. Very similar. It came out of, apparently, I've got some of that's from a carotid artery and also some veins. So, back around November of last year, of 2021, people were asking me, well, how many people are having these strange clots? And I didn't have a very good answer for it. So starting in November, I started making notations of whether or not the person was clotted or not or vaccinated. My green is people that I've been verified are vaccinated. Yellow typically is somebody that has smaller clots. And the orange is somebody that had more significant clots, the clots that are really kind of concerning to me. I have it dated for the quarter, I mean, numbered by the quarter. So the entire quarter, I had about 130. Yeah, only almost 14% had no significant clotting. A lot of the substances that I'm seeing are stuff that looks pretty much, it's this white fibrous stuff. Now, instead of calling them blood clots, I try to refer to them as white fibrous clots or white fibrous structures. How come all of a sudden these things are happening in so many people? When I first started seeing these strange clots, in the beginning I thought, you know, this is kind of weird. It's kind of crazy. I don't understand. As I started gathering more and more photographs, I'm able to share it amongst other people that I work with. I talk to other embalmers that have 30, 40, even 50 years of experience.
I'm a licensed funeral director, National Board Funeral Director, and certified embalmer. I've been in the death care industry since 1982. I've been in the embalming process with well over 1,000 bodies. And I had actually noticed some of the differences in the clots as well in some of the bodies I had been embalming. And that had started recently.
First time I saw it firsthand pulled out of a deceased, my end, was about 3 months ago. Been struggling to embalm people for around about 18 months. My embalmer was complaining that he was having trouble getting fluid through people. And the way they do that is they cut into the carotid artery and they pump it around the body via a pump. He was struggling to get it through, and we kind of thought, well, maybe the pump wanted servicing, and had a look at it, it doesn't. pulled this out, and he kind of grabbed the end with the tweezers, and this comes out in one piece, one elastic piece. It looks like calamari.
Longest one that I have on video is probably almost 3 foot long, which is incredible to come out of the, you know, the juggler up here. It's just, it's incredible.
That is not normal.
I talked to other embalmers that have 30, 40, even 50 years of experience. Said, hey, you know, have you guys ever seen this stuff before? And the answer was always,
I haven't seen clots like these. These long, white, fibrous, different, not blood clots, but they're clotting the blood, so therefore you have to call it a clot.
I have been in this profession actually for approximately 12 years and approximately 2 to 250 bodies per year, and I have never seen anything like this until the vaccination.
Now, I've been an embalmer for 41 years. 41 years I've been embalming, and I've never seen clots like these.
Here's a guy who messaged me the other day. He even sent me a picture.
A fellow embalmer?
This is not mine. This is his. Same stuff. You see that?
You know, we know something's going on. I deal with a lot of funeral directors and embalmers. I attend national conventions, state conventions. I'm very involved. And, you know, we know something different is going on. We don't know exactly what's going on. But the timing of it is just hand in hand. We're connecting dots here. And it certainly appears that there is some relationship to the vaccine and these obstructions that we're seeing.
I was in Ohio last week or the week before last, and there were 100 embalmers at the Ohio Embalmers Association in my lecture, and I posed these photos up where people could see them. And nearly all of the embalmers out of 100 in this room raised their hands that they had seen clots and white fibrin structures of that kind of size. And when I ask again, when did they start seeing them? Again, it's that 16 to 18 month period.
This is different. And they need to figure out what it is. That's the problem, is they need to figure out. That's why we're talking to you, is that we're concerned for humanity.
Once I knew what was happening, I'm a man of principle. Do you know, your family is just as important as mine. If I don't speak out, we're all anyway.
As a Canadian embalmer, I have found that everybody I embalmed for over a year had fibrous mass clots. The fiber mass clots had been fed by blood clots at the ends that were integrated into the fiber mass clots. The fiber mass clots themselves were not blood clots. On average, I would embalm a body every day or two. Every single body had them, and they were massive.
When I was talking to Dr. Ken Thorpe, he was more concerned about the real tiny clots that he called microclots. And when I asked him about microclots, I was like, Let me explain. Sometimes when I'm seeing the blood, it looks like the blood is dirty. Almost like it has little fine grains of sand, or almost like fine grains of coffee grounds. The reason why he's more concerned about those is because they will go undetected and they can get lodged up in capillaries and end up slowly starving organs of the oxygen that it needs. So what I did is I captured some blood that looked dirty. It's clouding it up, but see, I wanted you to see the specks that are floating around. There we go. It
looks like rust.
It does. Look at, you can almost see that they're like stringy looking.
The first time I seen something that what I would describe as a different type of blood than I had ever seen consistency of blood was on a younger lady that was in a car accident. And I noticed onto the table as we were getting a little bit of drainage from her that her blood looked as if it was the only way to describe it is blood on beach sand. It was sticking to the table.
I began noticing strange things with the blood, looking like it had coffee grinds or sand in it, to complete separation, like a clear, orangish fluid, and then clots coming later, like the blood had almost separated. And of course, then there are the fibrin structures that we get, and it doesn't matter if it's a young or old person.
I'd like you to kind of feel you can kind of hold
it's
on
like
to
a rubber band almost.
Yeah, like a rubber band or like calamari.
So of course that explains people stroking out like.
And that was my concern in the very beginning of all this. The whole thing was, as I'm seeing all of these strange clots, I'm hearing stories of blood clots and embolisms and sudden heart attacks.
Scientists say there has been an increased rise, a sharp rise, in unexplained deaths during the pandemic, deaths that are not listed as COVID-related.
I would just like to find answers because so many people, young people, are just dropping dead. There were two in the local paper today out of Lafayette, Indiana, and I question, how did they die?
Autopsies are not being done and performed as often and as frequent as it had been done in the past. You know, there's no way that that type of obstruction would not cause stroke, heart failure, some type of pulmonary embolism. That would certainly take someone out.
Now, most of the people are not autopsied. Therefore, no one will see what I see.
And that's why what we see back there, people need to know. Nobody will know unless we tell them what we're seeing, because it happens, and then you have a visitation and a burial, and it's over.
I feel as though I am seeing something that could be causing their death. And the dead can't speak for themselves. So therefore, the only way to bring this forward is like, I have to speak for them. Since the vaccine, this rubbery stuff, this stuff here is absolutely... No, hold on. I don't know who this is. Hello? Yes. Okay. I'll be there as soon as I can. I'll be there as soon as I can. I'll give you a call shortly. All right. Bye. Okay. Well, it looks like I got to go to work. So maybe you guys can come with me and we can talk along the way.
They would let us shoot.
I've been trying to warm people up to the idea of doing it. So maybe we just go ahead and try to go up there and I'll give them a call as we're on our way and see what they say.
Good morning. My name is Lieutenant Colonel Teresa Long, and I've been invited here today to testify to the truth before the legislators of Idaho. The information I'm presenting is made as a protected communication under Title 10 USC 1034 as a whistleblower. My opinions are my own and do not reflect that of the United States Army, the DOD, or any entity thereof.
Insurance companies figured that if there was something catastrophic that happened to the United States, they would see a 10% increase in all-cause morbidity mortality. 10%, just like an unprecedented catastrophic you know, natural event or something that happened in the United States.
U.S. life insurance companies have reported an overwhelming and unexplainable increase in all-cause deaths among 18 to 49-year-olds.
40% is no one's even calculated that. I mean, that's never been factored into what things would look like. It's apocalyptic.
In my 15 years as a doctor taking care of soldiers, I have never seen this litany of debilitating and potentially deadly medical conditions in soldiers. These conditions included strokes, transient ischemic attacks, pericarditis, myocarditis, erratic heart rates, arrhythmias, rapid onset and progression of various cancers to include testicular cancer, esophageal cancer, brain tumors, neuroendocrine tumors, spinal tumors, thyroid dysfunction, multiple sclerosis, cognitive impairment, persistent severe insomnia, suppression of the immune system, unprovoked blood clots in the splenic and portal vein, avascular necrosis, liver dysfunction, menstrual irregularities, and miscarriages.
Well, I think if you look at the 5.3.6 post-marketing analysis report, the 1,291 adverse events, I don't think those came as diagnostic tests. I think they came as confirmatory tests. You ordered a product. You wanted the product to kill people. Hey, stockholders, we got exactly what you ordered.
Fourth shot, Borla, the CEO of Pfizer.
Good for CVS, good for Walmart, good for your health.
When I reached out to Army Public Health Command and numerous senior medical and operational leaders about my safety concerns, I was ignored. Threats against my career were made, but no appropriate actions were taken to fully investigate the number and scope of adverse medical events after COVID vaccines.
What I was here today to speak about truly was the weaponization of public health.
Oh, I forgot to mention, I'm also a whistleblower. That person right there called me one day. I called her, I can't remember, it was an email. And she said, have you seen the DMED system? Have you seen what it's up? And I'm like, I'm working on the border. I'm trying to stop 12,000 people from coming across this border a week. And she said, well, take a look at it.
Seeing the DMED data? I have significant concerns that we won't have a standing army in 5 years.
Case 1-01, United States Air Force A-10 instructor pilot, mid-30-year-old male, hospitalized 12 hours after vaccination. Diagnosed with pericarditis anaphylaxis, removed from flight status for 6 months, thus negatively impacting unit mission readiness. I have never felt so abandoned by the military. I have been forced to take something that brought me close to my death. I was mocked, discredited, unsupported. Our squadron morale was ripped to shreds. All these things were completely unnecessary. We were truly less ready on multiple levels.
I had to talk to a wife of a soldier that had a stroke, which required speech rehab for several months, and talk to her while he was in the ICU and say to her, he's going to be okay, and he'll be able to serve again because this is what he loved to do.
Back in September 2021, I submitted an affidavit in the Robert V. Austin case in which I outlined how the DOD was violating its own risk management process in their push to mandate the vaccine of every member of the armed forces with an experimental vaccine. After my testimony was made public, the DOD made no effort to investigate my safety concerns.
I got contacted by Attorney Tom Renz over the weekend, who represents some whistleblowers within the Department of Defense.
I have declarations from all three. The state is under penalty. This is under penalty of perjury. We intend to submit this to the courts. We have substantial data showing that we saw, for example, miscarriages increased by 300% over the five-year average, almost. We saw almost 300% increase in cancer over the five-year average. Cancer is not being talked about except for by Dr. Ryan Cole. Thank you, doctor.
I was the first pathologist in the world to say, guys, we're seeing an uptick in cancers. That toxic spike protein has so many mechanisms that allow cancers to wake up, and certain cancer genes that it binds to and promotes mechanisms. Everywhere I go, radiologists, interventional radiologists, oncologists, cancer surgeons like I met today, cancer, 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 30-year-olds, 20-year-olds, 40-year-olds, reactivated or second shot, third shot, month later, breast cancer stage 4 everywhere.
We saw, this one's amazing, neurological. So neurological issues which would affect our pilots, over 1,000% increase. 1,000.
Ten times. That's 10 times the rate, and obviously that
resonates. 83,000, 82,000 per year to 863,000 in 1 year. Our soldiers are being experimented on, injured, and sometimes possibly killed.
Senator Johnson looked in the camera and said,
"The Department of Defense, the Biden administration is on notice. They must preserve these records, and this must be investigated."
And within 24 hours, that system that is run by the Defense Health Agency was shut down.
This is the bottom line up front. This is the weaponization of our healthcare system. These are done in acts by legislators. These all started a long time ago. Some could say in biblical times with good and evil.
If we think that there are not nefarious actors in the world, people that work for principalities and dark places, if we think that, we're fooling ourselves, right? Because that's where we're at.
1974, Henry Kissinger put out a paper that said we need to decrease the world population. And that's when the globalists kicked in.
We've got to stabilize the population. When I was born, no, there were
so what's wrong with the population? I mean,
we're too many people. That's why we have global warming. We have global warming because too many people are using too much stuff.
Our book, Limits to Growth, was the first concrete effort using a computer to look at trends that unfold over decades, even a century. We were trying to understand long-term physical demands on the planet. And in the 70s, we were thinking that probably in the period 2010 to 2030 was when the planet would start to encounter limits.
Here is what Dr. Meadows' computer shows. Since the year 1900, the Earth's resources, there at the top of the chart, have been steadily used up as population, food consumption, and production of goods have soared. Ahead of us, sometime after the year 2000, this computer study foresees calamity. Resources drop more steeply, and food and production follow suit. Population continues to expand for perhaps one more generation, then collapses calamitously as deprivation takes hold.
Now, 11 billion people, still a lot, but the good news is that the faster we improve health, the faster family size goes down.
The World Economic Forum, you have Klaus Schwab and George Soros and Bill Gates. They talk about depopulation. They talk about all of these kind of utopic ideas that they have.
The United Nations Sustainable Development Goals are 17 targets we must meet by 2030. To ensure decent lives for all on a healthy planet. Right now, it's expected we will fail. One reason for that is the growth in our global population.
We have a golden opportunity to seize something good from this crisis.
COVID-19 also helped legitimize instruments of control.
It's a deep, systemic, and structural restructuring of our world.
Therefore, we have a unique but rapidly shrinking window of opportunity to learn lessons and reset ourselves on a more sustainable path.
This pandemic has provided an opportunity for a reset. This is our chance to accelerate our pre-pandemic efforts to reimagine economic systems that actually address global challenges like extreme poverty, inequality, and climate change.
Also be clear, the future is not just happening. The future is built by us.
Those people definitely have had tremendous influence and sway in this whole thing. And that is why they seemingly know how to hold these events and almost perfectly predict what's going to happen.
The Event 201 scenario is fictional, but it's based on public health principles, epidemiologic modeling, and assessment of past outbreaks.
An outbreak that circles the globe and affects people everywhere.
In other words, we've created a pandemic that could realistically occur.
I know we would all agree that if we had a vaccine in hand for CAPS, it'd be a game changer.
A majority of Americans expect a vaccine to be available within 2 months, and 65% of those polled are eager to take the vaccine, even if it's experimental.
Vaccinate, make an appointment. Vaccinate, make an appointment.
acetaminophen. And go mind vaccine. Trust in your health.
Trust and not debate. The vaccine, believe it's safe to take.
And we will shoot 500 vials, and then we will skip 500 more. We have a good time when you're the vaccine. Stick it in me.
And because you are in a war, because this is a fifth generation warfare for your hearts and your minds, it's done mostly by digits, right, through the computer and those kind of things, but it's also done with adjunct weaponry, and this adjunct weaponry in this case is a COVID jab.
They don't want you to know that your body is now their property and playground, and they will do with you what they feel like doing to you, and they will destroy your life if you don't take a lethal needle in your arm. And it is. It's the new bullet. It's the new missile. It's the new form of warfare. You don't need to fire a bullet and win a war.
I wanted people to understand that we're in a fifth generation warfare. Fifth generation is for the heart and the mind.
The United States government has been engaged in psychological operations on its own citizens for over 60 years. MK Ultra and Operation Mockingbird are just two of the declassified programs designed to manipulate the minds of Americans and the world. The majority of these operations occur in plain sight, with the purpose of gaslighting and undermining those who seek the truth and pose a threat to the agenda of the global elite. Just kidding, you conspiracy theorists. The government would never lie to you.
Read my lips.
We got a call regarding you coming over here multiple times, and it seems like they don't want to talk to you.
Well, now it seems that way because she called the police on me. Okay.
You should always be suspicious if the people in charge of safety don't want to see the safety data. That should be a red flag. I couldn't understand why people aren't looking at this data. Even the clinical trial for the Pfizer vaccine showed that the vaccine killed more people than the placebo group. It's supposed to be the other way around.
So what's your name?
My name is Steve Kirsch.
Steve Kirsch?
Yes.
Okay. Where do you work? What do you work
for? I'm a journalist for Substack.
Substack?
Yeah. Okay. I have about close to a million followers on Substack.
So I've been called an anti-vaxxer, I've been called a misinformation spreader. MIT has labeled me a misinformation super spreader. And in fact, if you go Google, you type in misinformation super spreader, I'm the top hit in the entire world. Why am I labeled a misinformation super spreader? I have no history at all of being a conspiracy theorist. How do I go from being, hey, you should get vaccinated, waving the flag to I love Tony Fauci, to saying, wow, we've been lied to? How did that happen? I was vaccinated in March of 2021. My wife was vaccinated, and all my kids were vaccinated. So you couldn't call me an anti-vaxxer. I've always gotten all these vaccines that the government has recommended. I've always trusted the government. And then I started hearing stories from my friends. So one person said that she asked me if the vaccines were safe. And I said, of course they're safe. And I said, why are you asking me this question? I mean, like, you know, have you not turned on the news? Like, where have you been? She said, well, three of my relatives were vaccinated and they died a week later. And they were all perfectly healthy before they got the vaccine. And I said, well, that's impossible. That must be wrong. And then she replied, yeah, but they're dead.
Is it really safe? And is it really
effective. These vaccines are safe. They are incredibly effective.
Vaccines are safe and effective.
Getting a booster different from your original vaccination is likely safe and effective.
But if there's one message that needs to cut through all this, the vaccines are safe. I promise you, they are safe and effective.
Researchers have confirmed that the Oxford AstraZeneca COVID vaccine is safe and effective.
This is what you don't see. This.
Surprisingly, most people don't want to know what's in the vaccines. In fact, nobody wants to know what's in the vaccines because nobody in Congress is asking to analyze the vials. Nobody in the mainstream media has ever asked what's in the vials. And the public doesn't want to know either because the public's not asking what's in these vaccines. If people understood what was in the vaccine, they'd go apeshit.
The first one is a typical package insert that we see with any vaccine. When you open the box, next to the vial, you find a package insert that has information about what the product contains. And this is a typical vaccine insert from a vaccine that helps protect against meningitis. It's a more traditional childhood vaccine. And the other label that I'm going to show you, the other package insert, came from a box of mRNA product. So vaccine that was brought to the clinic for the purpose of giving that to children. And this should look the same as the other package insert that I showed you. But yet when we open it almost 2 years into this, we find that it still says intentionally blank.
And it, I mean, they're allowed to, under emergency authorization, put anything in them they want. And the FDA isn't inspecting any of these facilities. The European Medicine Agency allowed the purity to go from 100% requirement down to 50%. And then all of a sudden, in the middle of the shot rollouts, you hear, oh, okay, we don't have to worry about this cold chain. So now you've got degrading products, which probably benefited some people in the sense that they broke down so fast that they got basically some mushy fat and sludge and dodged the bullet. But the ones who got the proper dose at the proper temperature are probably the ones that got harmed the most. I mean, how much do they care? They're making billions.
The mRNA was the technology, but we had less experience, only 2 years working on this. And actually, mRNA was a technology that never delivered a single product until that day. Not vaccine, not any other medicine. So it was very counterintuitive, and I was surprised when they suggested to me that this is the way to go.
You know, Steve Kirst, by the way, has a great offer out there for your listeners. I don't know if you know about this.
No.
His offer is anybody from any major academic medical center or any government agency who will come to the table and have a fair discussion on vaccine safety and efficacy, he'll pay him $2 million.
Anybody? I offered $1 million, not to win the debate, just to come to the table, $1 million. And when they refused the $1 million, I said, okay, name your price. Is $5 million? $10 million? $100 million? What will it take for us to have a civil discussion on the record? On the record, on recorded, where we can go through the evidence in the Veris system and other pieces of data so that we can have an open discussion about this.
So the Veris is a voluntary reporting system. And it was created this way because the drug companies negotiated with the government to say, the government said, we will give you liability protection for your vaccines. But the quid pro quo is that we're going to establish this vaccine adverse event reporting system, which of course they could have done anyway. We have a Veris system in the United States. System in Israel was even worse. In March, these researchers came to the Israeli Ministry of Health and said, hey, we got a problem here. Basically, they're told that the vaccines are killing and hurting people, and you're withholding that information from the Israeli people.
So the latest Israeli vaccination studies are out, and Steve Kirsch says the results prove that the government was lying all along about the frequency of adverse events from COVID shots. Shocker.
I sent an email to over 200, close to 300 people at the CDC asking if any of them wanted to see the data.
Okay.
Almost 300 people. Not a single person wanted to see the data at the CDC. Stu, I have the personal cell phone for Grace Lee, who is the chair of the ACIP committee, which is the outside committee of the CDC. I asked if she wanted to see the data. She ignored me.
Did they explicitly tell you no, or did they just ignore you?
No, they just ignored me.
Have you been in this house before?
I have, yeah.
And for the same reason?
Yeah, so let her to contact her. Because she's not reachable. She's not reachable in her office. She doesn't answer her cell phone. She says her assistant doesn't answer her email.
That committee is responsible for approving and being the outside independent source for approving these vaccines.
How did ACIP recently come to the decision to recommend COVID-19 shots for this latest group of young kids? And what kinds of things were you looking for in the data?
We got a call regarding you coming over here multiple times, and it seems like they don't want to talk to you.
Well, now it seems that way because she called the police on me.
You know, I think we need to recognize that COVID-19 is here to stay. That vaccines are make for a safer and more reliable way to develop immunity against infection.
But now it's very clear that she's actively avoiding the question of whether she wants to see the Israeli data that shows the vaccines are not safe. That's pretty serious.
Okay, well, it seems like she's not interested, so...
How in the world could anyone, especially the top person in the world responsible for safety, not want to see the safety data that shows that the vaccines are not safe? They don't want to be confronted with even the question, do you want to see the data? They want to have plausible deniability.
Was the Pfizer COVID vaccine tested on stopping the transmission of the virus before it entered the market?
Did we know about stopping immunization before it entered the market? No.
Pfizer vaccine not only stops people from getting sick, but also stops them from spreading the virus to other people.
One vaccine could curb virus transmission from just a single dose.
They're stopping people also from transmitting the disease.
And the chances are very likely that you'll not be able to transmit it to other people.
Yes, it will protect you, but honestly, it's not for you. It's so you don't kill other people. It's so you don't spread it to other people. 114 million Americans, nearly half the adult population in this country, has had a vaccine shot already. 114 million of us have had it. The number of people who have died from getting the shot is zero.
There are about 14,000 Americans who have reported deaths. Now, that's probably underreported by a factor of 100. So you take the 14,000 deaths that are reported in the VAERS system, multiply it by 100, you get 1.4 million. But the deaths that happened 5 months later, and that's the bulk of them, are not going to get reported in the VAERS system.
An elderly woman has died in what's believed to be South Australia's first case of fatal blood clotting caused by the AstraZeneca COVID vaccine.
Investigation is underway tonight over whether a local man suffered blood clots as a result of getting the Pfizer vaccine.
Two teachers who were at Soames Elementary School for more than 20 years
and passed away suddenly this school year.
Therapeutic Goods Administration is calling for calm following the deaths of two people in our state who received the COVID vaccine.
Woodgrove High School student-athlete Colette Bain passed away unexpectedly after a medical emergency.
A 20-year-old nursing student died of cardiac arrest one day after getting the mandatory.
The 16-year-old had a cardiac arrhythmia.
High school cheerleader who died suddenly.
Conclusions over the death of a woman from blood clots after receiving the COVID
vaccine.
A Queensland
man is in intensive care tonight, suffering a blood clot after receiving his AstraZeneca
vaccine.
Over whether a local man suffered blood clots as a result.
Due to a blockage in an artery.
With medical experts confirming the death of a Central Coast woman is likely linked to the jab.
I said, we're just going to have to get used to this. And he says, the shots. And I said, yeah, we're just going to have to get used to this. This is the way it is. If people keep doing this, then this is going to keep happening.
The vaccine can kill you two different ways. It can kill you in the short term. Now, there's a longer term effect. And this takes 5 months to kill you. And this is when your veins are basically clogged up with this protein material, this amyloid protein material. That's not blood clots. Now, the timing of when the embalmers first started seeing these blood clots, mid-2021.
So many miles on my car, you know, it seems like half of my time is driving from one funeral home to another. The busiest I ever was, to be honest, was January of 2021. Now, I didn't even think about it being related to the vaccine at all at the time. Looking back, I say, no wonder they died of a heart attack or a stroke or some kind of a pulmonary embolism. Because you can't live with this stuff in you.
Probably do about 160 funerals a year. So I've been waiting for a young person that died suddenly, who'd also had a post-mortem, and then the family had asked me to embalm. So there are three planets that needed to align. And this poor guy of 30, he was full of it. It was hanging out of him like spaghetti.
This one here came out of the aorta from the heart. They take the shape of the vessels that they're growing in totally, and they gradually fill the vessels as they grow. And these, obviously, that's what's killed him.
Hey, I just want to let you know I'm pulling into the funeral home here, and I've got some guys that are with me. Are you fine with me bringing them in? And this clot coming out of the iliac. Normally we don't see clots in the iliac, in an artery. Usually they're in veins. And I'm probably not going to be able to get it all. This is not normal.
saw this one. The big one came out of the vein. The small one came out of the iliac artery itself.
Wow.
As the months passed by, the clots became worse, and each person, the quantity of them was much larger, and they were getting larger. We were doing an injection and drainage into the common carotid artery, and we were getting fluid in, and then all of a sudden it just stopped. We could not get any more fluid. We were not getting any drainage of any type.
That's a monster. Holy Jesus. Come on.
I believe the only way that a medical doctor could see this in the body is if they actually went internally into the body.
So this is coming out of a beating heart, all right? Look at this. Tell me if it looks the same way.
It's so good for you to come in today. It's good to see you.
Thank you, Doc.
So I'm excited to get this thermal imaging scan. But before we do that, I want to learn a little bit more about your medical history. Tell me, you know, when this all started, these symptoms that you had.
Early August of this year, my leg started swelling. I was getting a lot of pain from the crotch area all the way down to the ankle. They did a Doppler on it, and I had several clots in my leg.
Oh, wow.
So I was transported to the hospital. And they confirmed that, and also that I had a clot in my lungs.
So you went into the hospital. They put you on a blood thinner, presumably?
Yes, I got put on Eliquis when I was being released. And come to find out, the Eliquis did not work for me.
Okay. And did they let you know that that is extremely rare?
Every doctor I saw said it was extremely rare.
Which side did you get the shot in? Which arm?
I think it was both.
Do you think it could have been the left for both of them? Because you got two, right?
Yeah, it could have been the left.
Because the left arm definitely looked much, it had much higher thermal signal than the right. Yeah, so we can see the left side of his face has a much stronger thermal image, and then the white is also extremely hot. And this is in the area of the pre- and post-auricular lymphadenopathy chain. And then the tonsillar is also very well lit up, submandibular, submental.
The left side was the one where he has confirmed clots. The right side here is showing significant issues with the vascular system.
So I would recommend referring for an ultrasound of the lower extremities bilaterally to rule out any kind of new clotting or venous obstructions.
Hello?
Hi, Michelle. This is Nick and Matthew. How are you?
I'm good. So before the vaccines came out, there were 1 to 2 fetal demises every 2 or 3 months. You would see one. I finally had enough when I got this email the other day. It said that there was a record number of fetal demises and that there were 22 of them in 1 month. And in this email, it said that it's projected to increase each month.
The fetal demise in mothers, gestational mothers, in that 22 to 26 week period, I had a run of that in my funeral home, and 5 of the 6 were vaccinated. The other had remdesivir, and they all lost their infants.
We're just seeing a fridge full of babies, but we're not actually doing the funeral. So that's... It's a mystery to me as to where these babies are going.
So are you saying there's more fetuses in the refrigerators now than there was prior to 2021?
Yeah, I'm saying there's more fetuses now in the refrigerator than I've seen ever before.
I've been doing high-risk obstetrics for 43 years.
I see a vast number of patients a year. I don't know of any other maternal fetal medicine physician in this country that sees as many patients as I do by ultrasound. At one point in time this year, I was on track to see 9,000 high-risk OB ultrasounds. So I know what's going on, and I've seen death and destruction like I've never seen before.
The stillbirth rate is measured in terms of live births per 1,000. And really, it's come down in my career from about 10 to about almost 5.8 or 6. Now, let's go to 2021 and look at the stillbirth rate for Michelle's. This is horrifying. But if you take this death figure and you look at that rate at 29.3, that sigma that you're looking at is 40 plus sigma, standard deviation. Let that sink in. This is from Waterloo, Canada. 83 stillbirths, about 4,000 deliveries. That exact same thing you saw with Michelle's. If that weren't bad enough, look at this. I couldn't even put it. There were 13 dead fetuses in one 24-hour period. One 24-hour period.
1,200-fold increases in menstrual abnormalities. And then when we get into pregnancy, we're looking at a substantial increase in miscarriages, in birth defects, a substantial risk of fetal cardiac arrhythmia, fetal cardiac malformations, significant fetal growth slowing, significant reduction in amniotic fluid, fetal cardiac arrest.
Are you saying babies are having heart attacks in the womb?
Yes. The vaccine causes a significant inflammatory effect.
Three different safety monitoring systems. Again, they found no significant safety signals for the mother or for the fetus, because we have to remember in obstetrics, we're dealing with two patients.
So no increased risks to be vaccinated while pregnant.
Anything that causes inflammation in my business, in my area of expertise, causes damage, injury, death, and destruction in pregnancy. We've known that for half a century.
On March 1st, the FDA released the first round of thousands of pages of data submitted by Pfizer for review of their COVID-19 vaccine.
It's the 5.3.6 post-marketing analysis of the adverse events, in which they outlined that 83% of all pregnant women who got vaccinated ended up with a dead baby. They had 270 pregnancies. They could not account for what happened to 238 of those pregnancies, and the remaining pregnancies resulted in a dead baby. And they only had one normal outcome.
And originally the documents were going to take 55 years to be released, but because of a court order, we'll get all of the documents by year's end.
Thank you for the floor, Mr. President. Honorable National Assembly, in January this year, something happened that has not happened for decades. The birth rate fell by 20% compared to the same period last year. Chobo Getot, researcher at the KRTK Institute of Economics, points out that this drastic decline came just 9 months after the COVID mass vaccinations began in Hungary.
Now, I will say, a friend of mine, she just told me this the other day, her mother had volunteered at the hospital prior to COVID. So they called her and said, hey, would you come back in and volunteer? And she volunteered obstetrics, right? Babies. So she said, yeah, all right. So they retrained her. And then they called her back and said, I guess there's no point in you coming in. We're not having any babies born.
I never pass up an opportunity when I see a newborn baby. I stop and I drink it in. Because my heart aches to think that seeing a newborn baby may become one of the rarest things. And I want to be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But so many people have taken this. There's nothing as close to seeing the face of God as seeing a newborn. And you have just evil that is destroying that. And my heart hurts for God. Like, you could give people all of this. And they would use their time, energy, and talents to try and destroy it.
What the last 2 years has taught me is taught me that there is a pure evil in this world. A pure evil that has no respect for any of us. Where I can tell you, we are regarded in much the same way as livestock.
We were trained that the one thing that prevented adversaries from deploying bioweapons was that in order for them to have a strategic impact, our enemy would have to have a delivery mechanism that would allow them to expose a large enough population of people in a short enough period of time before the people knew they were being attacked. Dispersion in the air would be cumbersome and ineffective given UV light, dispersion, wind patterns, and that there are generally not significantly large enough numbers of people outside concentrated in a small area. Likewise, attempting to put them in water would have limited effectiveness because of dilution, degradation from chloride, etc. But what if? What if hundreds of millions of people would willingly, or under the duress of fear, allow themselves to be injected with a bioweapon? What if global mass vaccination could be accomplished in a short period of time by applying relentless coercion tactics and psychological operations to demoralize people into submission?
It's my professional medical opinion that this is a bioweapon, and that this was a bioweapon unleashed against humanity with the intent to depopulate and control the population of the world.
But basically, it's achieving its goal. If the goal was to reduce the world's population, it's working.
This has been well planned. This is Agenda 2030. This is the Great Reset. This is what it's all about, you know. So one of the hardest things, knowing what I know, was accepting that people are going to die because they're just not going to believe it.
We have to be the plan. And that means that each person in this room viewing this broadcast, replaying this broadcast, each one of you has a purpose. Each one of you has a critical, God-given role. And so if you are quiet or apathetic or complacent, you have to stand before God and you have to answer for that.
I can put out a warning to all the people that are in the military right now, officers who are responsible for everything that happens or fails to happen with their troops. If you don't stand in the gap, you're complicit in this crime.
If we, the only way we're going to save our lives is by together, clubbing together to do it. That's our strength. And this is probably the most biblical world event that anyone could ever imagine. It's World War III. This is a spiritual war of good against evil. And I just hope that there's enough good in the world that we can rally together to defeat it. Because if we don't, these monsters will destroy humanity.
Dance, baby, dance like the world is ending. Dance, baby, dance like the world is ending. Dance, baby, dance, cause the world is ending. Dance, baby, dance like the world is ending. Dance, baby, dance like the world is ending. Dance, baby, dance, cause the world is ending.
Get vaccinated. It's incredibly effective, but the truth is, not enough people are getting it. We've got to change that, so we can all have a safe and healthy holiday season.
people who are not getting vaccines, who are believing the lies on the internet instead of science, it's time to start shaming them.
If you refuse to be vaccinated, you shouldn't get the same rights as people who've been vaccinated.
If you're willing to walk among us unvaccinated, you are an enemy.
Choice doesn't seem so tough to me. Vaccinated person having a heart attack? Yes, come right on in. We'll take care of you. Unvaccinated guy who gobbled horse goo? Rest in peace, Wheezy.
When are we going to stop putting up with the idiots in this country and just say, you now, it's mandatory to get vaccinated? Them, their freedom. I want my freedom to live.
Vaccine. I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate. Vaccine. Because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late.
Okay. Thanks, everyone. Hope to see you tomorrow with me and Roger.